cliffcentral.com.
Good morning, everybody. Yes, we are live. Live on a Monday and alive on a Monday, which is even more important than being live. I mean, you can live stream a funeral, but we're alive, which is excellent. Isn't it? Isn't it excellent, Sia? Isn't it great, Leanne Moll? Being alive?
Sure, yes. I do not want to live stream in the afterlife.
No, I think it's really, it's good, you know. People have to take this stuff seriously, this life stuff. It's you've got one shot. Go for it. Knock it out. Knock it out of the park. Make it count. Ooh, I was just thinking, I almost knocked my microphone over.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking, you know these people who've just done so much in their lives, and they're young, and they've already achieved incredible things. And I feel like a bit of a loser sometimes when I read these biographies, especially when it's someone in history that, you know, we do these episodes of Blind History, for example, and you look into some of these people's lives, and they've maybe lived 30, 40 years, and they've done everything. They've been to war. They've become important leaders in their country. They've converted people to their religion. They've changed the world. It's incredible. I mean, you look around, and it can make you feel like you're a bit of a loser, you know?
Hey,
yeah.
Technically, we've made people follow our Cliff Central religion.
Oi, let's not call it a religion, but yeah. I would hate anyone to feel that they were being strong-armed into a religion, but sure, Sia. Is that your I Love New York mug?
Yeah, shame. It's actually like a month, like a year exactly.
It's almost a year to the day that Sia saw the bright lights of New York City for the first time. And I saw something so sad over the weekend, speaking of New York City. I saw that because of lockdowns and coronavirus and everything else, people are moving out of New York at a rate of knots at the moment, and they've left the city. Hey, Leanne Moll.
Hi. I couldn't hear you for some reason, but yeah. I'm back.
We've got you now. That's all that matters. I was just telling Sia that it's so sad. New York, it appears that people are moving out. The streets are full of U-Haul trucks. You know, that's a big moving company. And people are actually clearing out of, but like upmarket neighborhoods, not the average neighborhoods. Those people can't afford to go anywhere else because they probably work nearby. And there's a little bit of exaggeration when there's a story that the story is that people are moving out of New York, so they have to find evidence for that. But I know people in New York, and they tell me it's kind of depressing because the place has lost its energy since. And one of the things I loved about New York is that you could wake up at 3 a.m. and there would be people wandering around and stuff going on. And, you know, these same people who have lived in New York for a couple of years now, some of them are telling me that the place has just lost its electricity, its vibe.
Wow.
And that's sad because that place is just the most lively. It always felt to me like the center of the universe, you know.
What are some of the reasons why people are moving out, though?
Because there's so many homeless people now, and the garbage is piling up on the streets, and the city's being run really badly by Mayor de Blasio. And it's also becoming less safe again. You know, the whole thing that Giuliani did in the 1990s in New York was to clear it up and tidy it up and make it a place that people could be proud of living in. And it became a cultural center again. And it became, you know, there weren't like prostitutes asking for work in Times Square. And you could go down there and you wouldn't see, you know, cops arresting people for trying to sell drugs and fake goods. Although you'd see a little bit of that, but not a lot. And Giuliani really cleaned the city up so that you could, it became this mecca for tourism and for culture and for all kinds of things. And to a large degree, it still is. I'm not going to take all that away. I don't think that coronavirus can ruin all of that. But I do feel like New York is just, it's taken a massive knock. I mean, the whole world has, but New York especially, because they were hardest hit in America. You know, the mayor is, the governor, Andrew Cuomo, has gone on record as saying, you know, that he handled the coronavirus better than any other governor. But the truth is that New York has more deaths than almost any place, I think, except maybe New Jersey and California are creeping up very quickly behind them. So it's not good. I do love that place so much, so that it upsets me to hear this, you know.
Mm. Yeah,
okay,
well,
I'm feeling a little better. I thought maybe it was some economical reasons, and then that would mean we'd feel the ripple effect after some time. But if it's just like a New York issue, then...
Well, look, a lot of businesses...
Sorry
have...
for thinking about myself and
no,
this issue.
No, but you're right, because that's what people do, Sia, whether we like it or not. People always make it about them. And this does affect all of us, because those little businesses that... You know, we know in this country, there was a list that was sent out on WhatsApp the other day of all the restaurants that have closed down in South Africa. And some of those places are places that I loved going to that are not there anymore. They've closed down, never to return. That's always sad. But the number of them all at once because of this crisis that we've all been through, that's what makes it particularly hard to swallow. Anyway, how was your weekend? What did you get up to? Leanne, what did you do?
I went to visit my brother because he's bought a new house that he's renovating.
Wow.
It's quite nice to see some upward movement amidst all of this that's been going on.
That's very brave of him to buy property and to start renovating it during this time. Wow. Well,
now's a very good time. It's a buyer's market.
Yeah.
You know, so if you know, to bond a two-bedroom house can cost so much less than it used to.
Right. Interest rates are down, almost, property prices are down. Yeah. You're absolutely right, yeah.
So it's a good time. So it was nice to see some positive development and changes and growth, and you know, a lot of people were working at the property. It was so nice to see them all have, you know, they were all so happy to have jobs and to have something to do.
Well, I've got a friend I saw over the weekend, and he just got back from working on those ships, and he made a fortune. I mean, he banked all his money, because while you're on there, you don't have to spend, you know. And he came back, mm-hmm. and he's bought like two or three properties.
Wow!
Oh, wow!
And I thought, Jesus, you know, this isn't the worst time for everybody. It's the worst time for most of us, but not for everybody. Clearly, good for him.
What did he have to do on the ship?
Hard work.
I don't know. I think he was one of those art auctioneer kind of guys. You know, those ones who sell. They go on those expensive cruises, and then people buy art on the cruise. I don't know. Probably Americans, because that's the last thing, the last place I would think about doing that. Although there are also a lot of old rich people in these cruises, so maybe that's what they go for, buy stuff.
Old, rich, and bored.
I have a huge chunk of people I matriculated with who went off and worked on ships as well. And it was one guy in particular who I asked, like, how's it really going? And I think he was one of the few who was truly honest about the realities of working in an environment like that. It's not just the cool Instagram photos and getting to travel everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
It's a lot of like manual labor.
Yeah, especially on those yachts. You know, if you're anything kind of less than you're in charge of the ship, it's really hard work. And yeah, I hear you. I think that there are jobs and there are jobs on them. But they also, I mean, those people on those ships had the worst time when lockdown happened. Remember, they couldn't get off in many places, and they also weren't sure which country they would be sent to, because where in the world were they when it broke out? And remember that famous one in Japan, which turned into like an offshore incubation hub for the virus?
Yeah.
And that was a big story at the time. Anyway. All right. I got a suggestion or two here.
Changes in a couple of months.
Mike sent this to me. Mike from Durban. He said he knows I'm an AC/DC fan, and there's a new album on the way. In August 2018... speculation began that former members Johnson and Rudd were back and working with the band again. And it turns out that on the 28th of September of this year, AC/DC updated their social media accounts with a short video clip depicting an illumination of a neon light in the shape of the band's lightning bolt logo, which led to speculation that they were preparing to announce a comeback. Now, these are old rockers, and I know a lot of people don't care about this, but they've officially confirmed.
I had no idea that they were still making music.
I know.
No,
so they've confirmed that Brian Johnson, Phil Rudd, and Cliff Williams will be in the band alongside Steve and Angus Young, effectively reuniting the Rock or Bust recording lineup, which is really fucking cool. So I know how Gord always goes on about Metallica, but if I had to see another band in my life, it would be AC/DC. You know, if you gave me only one. So that's really cool. Thank you, Mike. Nice stuff.
Well, if you think about it, it actually is prime time for old rockers right now.
Yeah. No, this is good for them.
They can't tour.
Yeah.
So any musician right now can make music to their heart's content and they stay at home. Mm-hmm. Now all they have to do is just pop the music online and Bob's your uncle.
Right. Absolutely. That's very, very cool. So there's something interesting. There's a little bit of useful information that was passed on by Mike. Thank you so much for that. And Mike also said, normally murder documentaries have a narrator and a group of actors who play the parts of the people involved with the families and witnesses interviewed on camera. But there's a Netflix murder documentary called American Murder, The Family Next Door. And it uses social media from all of these parties, including news camera footage and the police body cams. And he says this is just the most incredible the incredible TV show. This is Mike as well. So thank you, Mike. Some awesome suggestions. Isn't that cool?
I think it follows, what's her first name? The surname is Watts. And you're initially led to believe that it's a husband who is making a desperate plea and confused as to the disappearance of his wife.
Mm-hmm.
And then through the whole thing, you discover that he murdered his own wife.
I don't know how.
There was one investigator. It was the husband and the investigator in the room, and she says there are two people. Like, okay, look,
okay,
dramatic
on.
Line.
You
but
guys
it made the point.
I don't understand you people who watch these murder things on TV, and I don't understand it at all. I don't love. My sister watches this stuff. I know, Sia, you watch a lot of it. Leanne, you like it as well.
Yeah, you know what you're dealing with.
Oh, my God. I can't watch this stuff. You know, life is hard enough. There are enough dodgy people in the world without you having to go and find more. Why do you watch this stuff? Why do you want to see how bad humans can be?
I need to know who I'm dealing with in the capacity and the potential of humans and what screwed upness they can do.
But this is why you're
you a little bit of
this is why C is always paranoid about the killer, for God's sake, because he's looking for trouble.
And this is why I will probably evade the killer should I ever get into a situation like that.
What did you say?
Yeah,
Leanne?
it's about picking up all the warning signs and just educating yourself, really, and you know, just not being so naive and understanding what's out there. I don't know. And then there's just the kind of sick, morbid fascination, really. The same as anyone would have for watching a horror movie.
Yeah, but I don't even like that. I don't like watching horror movies.
Or not really horror, but like a thriller.
No, you're bringing this misery upon yourself. This is very bad judgment on both of your part and everyone else who watches these things. I get it, Mike, and thank you for the suggestion. But I'm not going to watch a murder that's... You know what? There's enough stuff in the world that's hard and difficult and nasty and shows humanity off in its worst possible guise. Why are you looking for these stories? There's plenty of stuff out there. I just think that I want to watch a nice.
I don't know. I think
want to watch a nice comedy and laugh and go to sleep with a smile on my face. And you guys are all watching horrors.
Yeah, I think you're definitely we're in the majority here.
No, the stuff that you watch is very popular. It's hugely popular.
Yeah.
People love it. That's why I got into a conversation a while ago that I had no contribution to make to about American Horror Story, that actual series,
yes.
You know, where they have those little short series, and some of them are apparently really good and some of them are bad, but I haven't seen any, and everybody else is talking about them, and I didn't have any contribution to make because I don't watch those things. So I felt like a bit of an idiot.
Oof. You see, one of the things that I was so obsessed with this weekend is finding out more about R. Kelly's altercation in prison.
Ooh.
See, and I know you would not. This is not your thing at all.
Well, I mean, it's R. Kelly. Let's hear, because we've been following his story from the get-go. What happened?
He was
to him?
Nearly shanked in prison last week.
I'm sorry, I shouldn't be laughing at that. Yeah, all right.
Look, the details are even more twisted. So this guy, a fellow inmate, spends the longest amount of time just priming this pen and turning it into a shank, and found R. Kelly in his cell on Wednesday.
Yeah.
And he just went in there and attempted to shank him, and R. Kelly somehow avoided it. But then this guy just jumped onto him and stomped on his head. Do you know what it's like for someone just to step on your foot? And imagine them trampling your head repeatedly.
Jeez.
So now R. Kelly and his lawyers are working to get him into solitary confinement. And look, I'm not going... If you just Google the story and you find this guy and just find his image, that's enough to scare you into not going into prison at all. I'm struggling to find his name, but if I were to describe
him... Is he a really scary-looking dude?
So he has one of his many facial tattoos.
Mm-hmm.
Says F the feds. That already tells you who you're
dealing
with.
Oh, my word.
He has a receding hairline, but he still decided to plait his hair into cornrows. So already he also looks very sad. And you know, there's this, I don't know, official, unofficial gangster rule that if you've killed someone, you tattoo a teardrop onto your cheek.
Yeah.
Well, this guy easily has 12 teardrops on his face. So I don't want to mess with him. No, thank you.
Yeah, this is amazing. There are apparently each tattoo means something. This is a scary looking son of a bitch. He has face tattoos all over the place. But you see, a couple of stories here, because we know that pedophiles especially get a very hard time in jail. And I can't say that I feel terrifically sorry for them. That's the first thing. We know that if you're a pedophile, you go to jail, then the other prisoners are going to hate you the most. Right? The other thing is that this guy looks like he could do quite a lot of killing if he hasn't already. He's a big, big scary looking killer type dude. And
I don't know. It looks like some kid got hold of a cokey pen and just drew all over his face.
Yeah, but the scary thing is those are permanent, and someone used a needle and he liked it.
Yes.
And then there's
if that came after me, I'd rather be in solitary confinement.
Yeah, and then there's, of course, the R. Kelly famous part of this, which is a whole different story. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, prison is so shit. I had this conversation. I think we spoke about it briefly last week. But, oh, my God, to end up in prison.
You need to know, man. You need to know these things. I'd far rather spend some time knowing about this.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Ignorance is bliss in the case of these horror stories. All right, so let's get into a couple of things from this morning. We've got news in a moment, but I do think that this story is really interesting, and I actually got an email about it from Catherine, who listens to us. But first, you tell us what actually happened here, because a bunch of queer activists have been facing eviction for staying at a Camps Bay Airbnb. They're basically, these are a bunch of rich, privileged kids who booked an Airbnb in Camps Bay. And then they decided...
I'm not 100% sure that they were rich and privileged, because 3 of the 7 are actually homeless.
Then how did they book the Airbnb?
Camps
Bay. Have you ever tried to book a place in Camps Bay? They want proof up front.
Yeah, so they actually did pay up front, which means...
They had money.
The group is very weird to me. I'm not quite getting how it worked.
Yeah.
But anyway, the High Court has now ordered that they have until midday of Thursday next week. Mm-hmm. So they've still been given a long time.
Premises. Coming Thursday or Thursday next week?
Sorry, this Thursday.
Okay.
The order was given last week.
Mm-hmm.
So they have to leave the property, and if they don't, they will then have to pay for all the services that will be used, like the SAPS, to get them out and forcibly evict them. But alternative housing is going to be provided for the 3 people who are homeless at the moment.
Please put them under a bridge.
Oh, Gareth, the whole thing is it's like kind of a bit un-PC, because the big issue is that I'm just getting to the to their exact tweet here and put it into their words.
The big issue is you can't.
They said there are members of our group.
Yeah.
There are members of our group who are homeless and unsafe because of their queer identity, who've been through various violences, and already we all suffer hate speech online. The homophobic, classist, sexist, and racist attention has been brought. This has brought is taxing in ways that we can't explain. Many people who can afford to buy a property in Camps Bay use it as an investment, not as housing. Many are not based in the country or belong to an elite group of high net worth individuals. There are only 32,800 of them in the country, yet they control 42% of the economy.
Shame. So what's all that got to do with the fact that... Hold on a second. No, let's just start off with the fact that there is a law, and if you own property and I move into it without your permission, you can have me evicted. That's the only important thing here. And by Thursday, we'll see just how much their protest amounts to. Get out. Get out of this person's house. Not your house. The fact that you have had a horrible life up to now, the fact that you have challenges, makes you no different to any other human being on earth. Where? We don't care. Go and sort your own shit out. Go and figure out your own way through the world. It's nobody else's responsibility to raise you because you've been raised badly.
So, just for clarification, these people decided to book this Airbnb because I've been seeing the story for a couple of days now, but it just didn't fully make sense to me. So they decided to book this Airbnb because three of them were homeless. And what was their long-term goal? Was there was it to establish a protest?
Yeah, they were going to
To establish a protest and to raise awareness of the fact that they're not the only ones who don't have safe places to stay in Cape Town being homeless, but because they're queer.
And then why, though, are there three or four issues all brought forward? Because that's confusing.
Because they're trying And remember, there are more than those three people in there. There are a whole bunch of rich people who helped to book this thing and pay up front. So this is not, this seems like an amalgamated issue. They're trying to coalesce a whole bunch of different unrelated things into one story. So here's an email I got from Catherine about this. Listen to what she says, because I think she makes more sense than any of us, including me. She goes, "Hey, Gareth, something I think would be interesting is to discuss this queer activist group who occupied a luxury Camps Bay mansion in the name of raising awareness for housing issues and safety for gay and trans people in SA. These people call themselves queer radical feminists. They paid 12,000 rand to get into the house for 2 days and then told the owners they're occupying the home, resulting in them being taken to court. Just to preface this story in an unrelated sentiment, I am a lesbian myself." All right, so this is Catherine who sent me the email. "Not only does it make the LGBTQ community a laughingstock, but it is also going to make it harder for people to hire accommodation in Airbnbs, resulting in more discrimination, not less." I think that's such a valid point. "The reason I've taken note of this is because the gay community in Cape Town is small, and I know some of the girls, sorry, GXRLS, you know, GXRLS, as they call themselves, in this group for a few years. They're privileged, university educated, and come from accepting homes. And yes, they studied bullshit degrees that may as well have been lesbian dance theory." Remember, this is a lesbian who wrote this email. "The whole production seems like an excuse to have a holiday in a beach mansion. No one cares if they're queer. Nobody cares if they're non-binary. Nobody cares if they're people of color. And yet, it is all they can talk about to grab attention. Be nice to hear your thoughts. Regards, Kay." So, I mean, what do you think of this? Because I've told you what I think. They should be put under the bridge if they're homeless that they were under before. It's not the person who owns a house in Camps Bay's responsibility to provide housing for children that are not theirs. And just because they're not safe in, I mean, if you're not safe in Cape Town as an LGBTQ person, then there's nowhere else in the country that you should be, because Cape Town's probably the most gay-friendly city in the country and maybe the most gay-friendly city in Africa. And of course, that doesn't mean you're 100% safe, but no one's 100% safe. We live in a country with huge amounts of gender-based violence, with a massive murder rate, rapists through the roof. So nobody's safe. Who do you, what kind of fantasy world do you live in where you're totally safe? And obviously, I'm against any kind of violence perpetrated against someone on the basis of their identity. So I would ordinarily stand with these people, but their life choices seem to have resulted in them being evicted this Thursday, and I think that's a good thing. What do you think?
I wouldn't want to be, I think there are better ways of dealing with this.
I think them noting that there are people who own these mansions and they don't live in the country, bloody, bloody, blah, that is so, I don't know what they're trying to achieve by bringing that up, because, well, sorry, that's the world and people have more money and they have more means.
They're talking about inequality. Inequality has become the rallying cry of people who have nothing else to complain about. And it's usually, it's not the poor people who are complaining about inequality, by the way. It's usually these rich people. And it seems like these guys are exactly that group.
But then the second point is, if they're talking about an issue of feeling safe and whatnot, how is that the problem of an Airbnb owner who's just trying to make their money? What about going to your ward counselor or your municipality as a whole? What about, I don't know, applying for some homeless shelter, something? No, see, I just feel like this is...
These people are not interested in this particular group and in many others like this group. They're not actually interested in solving problems like homelessness. It's just all about attention seeking. There is a video, if you go to Team News 24, that they posted on the 2nd of October outside the courtroom, where one member of this group is dancing while the others wait outside the courtroom. And she's doing this funny little dance in the hall of the courtroom to some terrible music. And it's all about attention seeking. It's performative. It's love me, love me, love me. These are people who have, to some degree or other, a certain kind of a need, a social need. I wouldn't go as far as some people who'd say that they're mentally ill. But I think that there are plenty of people who have found a way to get attention through these supposed causes. And in this case, this doesn't seem to be a legitimate cause in the first place. Of course, people are going to hop on board and say, well, it's homelessness. It's about all those things Leanne mentioned earlier. It's not. This is about a group of teenagers or 20-somethings who just haven't discovered that if you want something in this world, you actually have to work for it. And dancing outside the courtroom isn't going to make your life better.
Ooh.
Sorry. That's the truth. You know?
Yeah.
Nothing comes to you for free, even if you've got legitimate gripes. I'm terribly sorry that the world was not perfect for you to be born into, but that is the way it has been for millions and millions of humans before you and millions of humans on Earth right now. And if your biggest issue is that you are performing a funny dance outside a courtroom because you want to live in a Camps Bay mansion and you currently don't, well, guess what? That's the case for like 999 out of 1,000 people in the world, is that they don't live in Camps Bay mansions. Wouldn't it be nice to
have? Look, I'm not condoning any sort of behavior, but I get why protesting in Camps Bay is better than protesting.
I don't see them. if you want to bring awareness to homelessness, why don't you go and live under the bridge with the homeless people and actually report from there? No, it's much easier to go and live in a perfectly furnished, massive, I don't know how many bedrooms this place has, but probably more than four, mansion in Camps Bay. That's not a protest. You're just looking for a holiday. You want a free holiday.
It's very nice to live stream my protest on Instagram while I'm overlooking a great view than to protest in Hillbrow, you know?
My feet are dipped in the infinity pool.
Yeah. I'm very excited to see these twats being pulled out of that house and being thrown back into the accommodation that they were in before. And if they don't have accommodation, then it sounds like they've made plans for those who are homeless. Who, by the way, it sounds like the others were using them as a prop to be able to pull off their protest.
You just used an apt word, Leanne, in what you said. It is a little embarrassing for... I think the others will just go on with their lives and go home. And that's embarrassing.
It is embarrassing. It's exactly right. Okay, listen, we've got some headlines. So let's look at this. Gautrain strike is to go ahead today. NUMSA said they will have no option but to go ahead with planned strike on Monday until management returns to the table to renegotiate. I don't understand how a dispute between people who work and people who are worked for has to be everyone in this country's problem. You know, if there's something wrong with South Africa, and there is a lot wrong with South Africa, one of the things that we need to sort out is that you are not allowed to take your problem with your employer or your problem with your employee and inflict it upon society at large. It is not our problem. I do not give a fuck about NUMSA. I don't give a fuck about NUMSA's workers, and I don't give a damn about NUMSA management. They must get their, not NUMSA's management, but the management of things like the Gautrain. If you want me to use your services, they must be working. And I'm not using the Gautrain at the moment, so guess what? This doesn't affect me. But there are millions of people who depend on trains in this country, and our train infrastructure is falling apart, thanks in part to NUMSA. There are going to be no jobs left for you guys. I mean, I wish I could just grab the NUMSA trade leaders, trade union leaders, by the scruff of their necks and say to them, do you understand that soon there is going to be no work for your people? Your long-term goal should be to try and save jobs in your industry. Because those people who currently pay you union fees, who you're meant to be representing, are not going to be employed for long. All of this stuff becomes automated eventually. There's going to be no work for you. But you're so busy trying to get more money now that you're not thinking long term. Oh, it makes me crazy. Mm. So here's the story. Workers affiliated with the union threatened to down tools over a pay dispute between Gautrain operator Bombela Operating Company and themselves. They want so listen to this. They asked for more, but they were offered a 4.1% salary increase. Do these guys realize that we're living at a time where most people are earning half of what they earned in January last year? In January this year, in fact, most people are earning half.
Yeah.
They're getting a 4.1% salary increase. And no one's entering into this negotiation to say to them, are you guys insane? Do you even know what's happening in the world? Are you connected to reality at all? Because they turned down a 4.1% salary increase. So in other words, they're getting 100% of their salaries despite coronavirus, and we're going to pay you 4.1% more.
The union goes,
that's not enough.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, there's insanity here.
Total insanity. So you know what's going to happen ultimately? Because when you're so unrealistic, here's the real world. Just like for those queer activists who occupied that house in Camps Bay and now find themselves being hauled out by the police this Thursday, here's what's going to happen to these Gautrain workers, is you guys are eventually going to lose your jobs and people are going to stop using your service because it's unreliable. And ultimately, market forces will win. So I look forward to the day where all these NUMSA leaders are out on their asses and all the people who look to them for their wisdom and look to them for their leadership in trying to make the union an effective way for them to negotiate for their jobs, not only to, you know, to be paid what they do, but to have their jobs secured, they're going to find themselves deeply disappointed. Very, very sad. Cyril Ramaphosa is still talking about this mega residential city project in Mooikloof. Listen to this. $30 billion infrastructure development project is the outcome of a public-private partnership between Baldwin Properties, Gauteng Provincial Government, and the City of Tshwane. Apparently, the president on Sunday said his administration was now focusing on the implementation of this plan. Ramaphosa was speaking during the launch of the Mooikloof Mega Residential City Project in Pretoria. It's a 30 billion rand infrastructure development project. It's situated east of Pretoria. It's the outcome of this partnership, and they say it's going to be very exciting. Once completed, the project will have housed about 50,000 different apartments within its precinct. How cool is that?
Jeez.
I mean,
that's amazing.
I'm all for this. This is really good. And, you know, the fact is, wherever there's development, like Leanne was saying about her brother and his property that he's bought, I just love seeing growth, development, infrastructure being laid down. Excellent, excellent stuff. In other words, we're building. We're not just not maintaining what we currently have. Country's got to grow. The Khayelitsha Development Forum's what's that?
That is such a good news story to come out of everything. Mm. It's like the beacon of light that we've needed.
Thank God. Well, let's hope that this all goes according to plan and government spend the money properly.
Yeah.
All that stuff. There's still a lot of boxes that need ticking, but yes, I agree with you. Good news. So the Khayelitsha community said it's disappointed in the SAP is failing to make any arrests in connection with the recent mass shooting. This week, 10 people were attacked in the township. 6 people were killed. 4 were wounded. And this is like normal in Khayelitsha, you know? You live there and you just, oh, well, 6 people were killed, 4 were wounded. Yeah, gunmen just came in. They opened fire and people in a house. The Khayelitsha Development Forum's leader has said that it's been many days since the mass shooting, but not a single arrest has been made. I mean, this is really terrible. The police should be embarrassed about not having even made an effort to investigate and to arrest these people. It seems like, you know, you can get away with things in places like Khayelitsha because the cops are also scared. That's the truth. No one says that, but the fact is that the cops are scared to go into some of these places, especially on the Cape Flats. This is interesting. Rescue services were stepped up in efforts in southwest France on Sunday. Floods have cut off several villages and killed 2 people in Italy. 8 are missing in France. A French village close to the Italian border was the scene of devastation, with houses buried in mud and turned over cars stuck in the riverbed. It's incredible how, you know, nature still can wreak absolute havoc on people. 8 people were still missing on the French side of the border. Mm-hmm.
Nature doesn't care about COVID. They're like, it's like, we don't care. It doesn't care that we're going through absolute hell as it is.
Yeah. Here, have some more.
Fires and earthquakes and mudslides.
Yeah. Have some more of this. Here we go. Anyway, this is Storm Alex, which has barreled into France's west coast on Thursday, bringing powerful winds and rain across the country. And then it moved on to Italy, where regions across the north suffered an onslaught on Saturday. What we are going through is extraordinary, the prefect of the Alpes-Maritimes region said. His name is Bernard Gonzalez. We are used to seeing images of such disasters on other continents, sometimes with a lack of concern, but here is something that affects all of us in France. They've declared the region a natural disaster zone. So anybody who thought that it would be better to be in France, I beg to differ. And that's in the Maritime Alpes region, which is obviously where the mountains are in the south, where the border with Italy is. And then Donald Trump took a little surprise visit around. He got into his car and he was waving at crowds outside the Walter Reed Hospital, did a little round there just to show them that he's alive and well. And he says he's recovering nicely. And he may just be released even today, they say, which will be incredible because this guy is in the, you know, he's older than Boris, and Boris Johnson was in hospital for like 2 weeks and hasn't been the same since he went into hospital. The premier of Brazil, what's his name again? Bolsonaro. He was these two are substantially younger than Trump by like 10 years or more.
Yeah, but Trump is getting cutting edge treatment. Let's just be clear. He's been treated with what's used to treat severe cases.
Either way, if he comes out of this and it looks like it was a nothing, it's going to affect the way people feel about coronavirus. It's going to become a referendum on coronavirus, whether we like it or not.
Mm.
Here's what Leanne was talking about. So this is the treatment he's been given. He's given the steroid dexamethasone, which is normally reserved for serious cases. However, he sought to project an image of strength, tweeting images of himself appearing to work from the hospital. I mean, why do they say that? So let me see. This is the BBC. They go, he tweeted images of himself appearing to work from the hospital. appearing to work? You know, I'm so sick of this coverage. It is just so blatantly biased. It is so obviously manufactured. Jesus Christ. This is a man in his 70s, and he's got coronavirus. Now, the same people who are telling us, oh, it's just like he's appearing to work, these are the same people who've been telling us for months how dangerous this disease is. So as soon as the guy they hate gets it, it's not so bad and he's pretending. Gee, I mean, this is just such fucking hypocrisy. Can't stand this.
I didn't look much into this thing, this point, because I think it's much of muchness. It's a non-story.
Yeah.
But I think when they say appearing, because there was some slight hub and bub over the weekend around you know, the backstory as to how images get published is that a photographer will take an image, they have to upload it onto some sort of rights site, like the Associated Press or whatnot, and then media outlets can then use those photos. So there were two particular photos that were taken of the president while he was working at a table at Walter Reed, and they were uploaded at different times. And if you look at the time zone differences, they clash. So people were speculating that he wasn't really working, and these were all just staged because he should have been asleep or something. It's a non-story because people are just picking at it because it's the President Trump.
You know, it's just amazing to me. We've been told by a certain sector of the political press how dangerous coronavirus is, and we've got to take it super seriously. We've got to mask up, and one of the evil things about Trump is that he didn't wear a mask all the time, and he hasn't spent enough time telling people to wash their hands or hidden away in the basement like Joe Biden did. And then when he gets it, we get not an ounce of sympathy. Now, these are the same people who've been telling us how deadly this disease is. And then in the same breath, they're like, ah, Trump's got it, so we don't care about that. Either you care or you don't. If you don't care, then just tell us you don't care. But you can't stop caring just because the guy who you don't like has it. You should be as sympathetic
All of these emotions that you're talking about, and emotive words that you've put in there, should not even come to the fore when you are a news agency.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that those two things are living together at the moment is very wrong.
It shows you how poisoned all of this has become.
We did touch on it briefly on Friday, but I think, man, it just ran away with us over this weekend as well. The people still making fun of the fact that he has the virus.
I don't have a problem with humor. Don't get me wrong. And I've always said that there's nothing worse than those humor police who tell the rest of us that we must laugh at certain things and we mustn't laugh at others. Like I put out on Instagram two funny things about Trump over the weekend. There was that video of him talking to Biden at the debate, and then those Ghanaian funeral guys come along with the music and they carry the coffin. You know those guys. So that was funny. And then I found a picture of Melania that someone sent me where she's got a spade in her hand and it says, "I make grave for husband." All right?
Mm-hmm.
So those, I don't think that anyone can have a problem with that because it's funny. And when anything in the news happens and these are public people, you should be able to make fun of them. What I find disgusting is people tweeting like they hope he dies.
Mm.
And I think we discussed this briefly on Friday. That just seems to me that there's a moral disconnect in these people's head because they're the same people who've been telling us, this virus is terrible and people are going to die. But if Trump's going to die, it's okay. We like that.
It's so weird.
And then also, have you guys seen in the coverage that USA Today did, they were profiling this presidential suite at the Walter Reed Hospital. It looks like it has not been touched since dinosaurs were alive. This place is actually, in my opinion, so tacky and odd. And they were trying to drum it up like, oh, don't feel bad for the president because he's living in a presidential suite. They call it a six-room presidential suite just for the commander-in-chief that includes an intensive care unit, a kitchen, a living room, a bedroom, and a dining room with a crystal chandelier. Then there are things like the duvet covers that even my grandmother doesn't even use anymore.
I'm looking at the pictures now. It looks really ordinary, actually. This is not great.
What? But yeah, I was surprised to know that President Trump going into hospital is the first sitting president to be admitted into hospital since President Ronald Reagan. That was 39 years ago.
Well, it looks like that.
No wonder it hasn't been updated.
That's it. The decor is still from Ronald Reagan's time. Anyway.
So the only thing that I'm confused about is this specifically a suite or a room just for the President of the United States?
Yeah, I think that's what it's there for. It's a government facility. I suppose, maybe the Vice President could use it or whatever, but I'm sure that it's for executive government official use only. You know, they've got places like that all over America. They've got certain facilities that are only for, the top brass of the military, and they've got certain facilities that are only for members of Congress and so on. So, yes, I'm sure that this is particularly for him. I wonder if those gay activists from Cape Town don't want to go and, you know, what is it they call occupy? Go and occupy this thing as soon as Trump is released and he seems to be fine. So he's going to get out and then that's going to backfire horribly too.
Well, you're just surprised at how much, maybe it's, you know, just because certain things we don't hear about often. Mm. But I'm still surprised by how much we as a tax-paying public pay for that we don't really realize. You know, I remember a couple of years ago after Madiba's passing, his doctor released that book that the family took off the shelves. But reading that and to find out what exactly happened with Madiba in his later years and how much is available for a president or a past president at the M1 hospital and the facilities there and the equipment there. It was, I know my imagination ran away with me slightly in picturing what all of this feels like or sounds like,
yeah.
But to know that they are fully equipped planes with medical facilities and, you know, at just a click, snap of a finger.
I'm thinking of the complete opposite.
What are you thinking?
So you've gone into hospital for a procedure. I don't know, to fix your skew finger or your cut up hand.
Right.
And you're having a nap and you're lying on your side and you wake up, and next to you is Trump sitting under a sheet going,
no,
with his tissues and his sweets and a little bit of like a bunch of flowers, and you think,
and then the first lady comes in to visit with the fruit basket and flowers.
And my mind went to why all the special treatment, and then I thought, okay, I understand why, because yes. That just doesn't fit.
Excuse me, could you lend me your cell phone charger? I need to tweet.
And then, like, there was a fake account.
There was a fake account that I saw created on Twitter, something along the lines of President Trump on morphine.
Oh yeah,
and just tweeting stupid shit from it. It's funny, but also stupid.
One of
the things was, "Hey guys, I'm still on morphine, and now I get why free healthcare is important. Obamacare for the win."
Yeah. I think this is all very it's all very amusing because it shows you just how crazy the world is that we live in now. Because honestly, this will become the story about whether or not we should fear coronavirus from here on in. If this guy survives and he survives and he looks like he's gone through absolutely nothing. I mean, there are videos of him coming out of Walter Reed now. There was a video of him going in. He's tweeting the whole time. He got in the car and did a little trip around and waved at the crowds. So it turns out someone was ordering pizzas for the crowds outside, and they said it could even have been Donald himself.
Listen, if you listen to his doctors, his SpO2 level, you know, normal is 100 for all of us.
Right.
And his was dropping slightly. It dropped twice slightly into the late 90s. Now, that's even better than my general health.
Yeah.
Because without my sleeping Jesus, for instance, my SpO2 level goes to 60.
Jesus. So Trump with COVID is actually healthier than Leanne Moll without.
I mean, when they were talking about his SpO2 going into the late 90s twice, I was just rolling my eyes. I mean, there are people lying in hospital who are battling through so many things. He's like hardly sick at all. He had a little bit of a fever and that was it.
Well, hopefully this will make lots of people who are scared, who are much younger than Trump, who are much healthier than Trump because he is overweight. It'll make those people go, oh, okay, you know what? This thing isn't so bad. It isn't going to kill me. And maybe I should just stop being such a paranoid nutcase.
But this also builds more and more into this October surprise thing. Interesting to me that the build up to an election around this time, there's always something that either works for or against one of the major candidates.
Yeah, they call it the October surprise.
Like, actually,
and you see all these conspiracy theories too online, right?
I actually believe it now. I believe it's sound. I think some things are planted, like that clip being released around this time. And sometimes it's also just a candidate making the most of the moment and what they can do around this time. Like for the Obama campaign in 2012, this was around the time that Hurricane Sandy happened. So you drum it up. You then make sure that you're around people and you're helping and you're sympathetic to make people who wouldn't ordinarily vote for you go, "Aw, actually, yeah, maybe I will vote." We're all just being played on some level.
I saw a whole lot of celebrities are starting to do early voting, and they wear a little badge afterwards to say they voted.
Mm-hmm.
And this is supposedly some kind of virtue signaling that's new in Hollywood now. Now they all want us to know that they voted because they're so brave. You know, they're doing such an extraordinary thing, these Hollywood B-listers and C-listers who we've forgotten about that suddenly pitch up online with an "I voted" badge. Oh, so hard for them. I'm so proud. So proud that there are people in Hollywood who can show us all that voting is a tremendous act of bravery and unbelievable. Well done to them. Let me go and look at some more of these pictures of them with their "I voted" badges.
There's still so many layers of the US election that I haven't wrapped my head around and that confuse me. The fact that some people can request to vote before everyone else votes, and there are also people who can request to vote at home while others can't. I just don't know how that's all justified.
Well, you can do it here. I mean, if you're very old, mm-hmm. or if you're sick, or if you're going to be out of province or whatever during a provincial election, you can ask to cast a special ballot. It's normal all over the world.
But that's also like in the week of the elections.
Yeah.
Now, for people to have this sort of right is quite surprising to me. Like this guy in Florida, this is a person who took the system and tried to work it a little too much, who's now been arrested because he requested a ballot for his wife, but his wife who had died a couple of years ago.
Okay, but that's so called, now he's that's
trying
not,
to have an extra vote.
Yeah, that's not special voting. That's voter fraud, and that does happen. They'll do what they call ballot harvesting as well. That's where the political party themselves get involved in a neighborhood, and they actually go door to door, or they just claim to be operating on behalf of people in the community that have not asked for a special vote, and then they fill in the ballot papers for them and send them in. So that's precisely why this is such a controversial thing.
I mean, what a dozer, though.
Yeah. I think you've got to be careful because this election, there's going to be an enormous amount of controversy around. No matter what happens on voting day, it's not going to just be a situation where the loser concedes. And I'm not suggesting that there's going to be some kind of constitutional crisis. I'm just saying that it's going to take a few days for all the votes to be tallied, for all the mail-in votes to be counted, for everybody to verify it, for the courts, if necessary, to get involved like they did in the Bush-Gore election of 2000. And then we'll eventually get a result. But it's not going to be the day after like we usually see it. There's going to be quite a lot of noise around this one. Suddenly everything's controversial, you know. And because of COVID, there's an excuse for some people to not go and vote in person. There's an excuse for other people to go and vote in person. So you just got to stand by for a little bit of shit that's going to take place, no doubt, around that. Look, I don't know about you, but I can't wait for these elections to be over. I love the U.S. I love the U.S. elections. I always get into it. I'm curious about American politics, but it's all that the world is going to be talking about for the next month, and I don't know if I can handle that for long.
Yep, there's no running away from it.
Yeah, there's no way around it.
All right, we're going to take a quick break for the 7 o'clock, and then we will be back. Your calls and messages on 0797482090. Let us know what your weekend was like and tell us what you're planning for this week, what you've got on the agenda. It's 7 o'clock on Monday, the 5th of October in the year 2020, the year of coronavirus. CliffCentral.com.